You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the podcast that showcases the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and a gastronaut. For a long time now on this podcast, when we've talked about the cutting edge of food industry tech, the name of one country keeps cropping up. Whether we're discussing plant-based innovations, startups or investments, or lab-grown meat, we're always drawn back to Israel. At a time when the world is having to adapt to future challenges like never before, Israeli innovation is helping to shape the future of our food system. So, where does Israel's success in innovation spring from? And what lessons can the rest of us draw from this success? This episode is all about the innovation culture in Israel, and I'm joined by somebody right at the heart of it all. Dr. Ami Applebaum is Chief Scientist at the Ministry of Economy and Industry, and Chairman of the Board at the Israel Innovation Authority. Ami, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here, Stefan. I'm glad I have the opportunity to talk with your audience.
Yeah, this is going to be fantastic. So just before we dive into the innovation dynamic, can you give me an idea of how important the ag tech and food tech sectors are in Israel?
It is one of the growth engines that we anticipate in Israel. The food and the agriculture in Israel is historically a very important and very critical for the food supply and the food security of the state in Israel, primarily because we are like in an island, not geographically, but politically. And the self-sustaining food is one of the critical elements of Israel. And with the population growth in Israel, that we anticipate that by 2040, the population of Israel will double, then we need to see on additional sources for other than just the traditional agriculture to feed the population here. And at the same time, we are very conscientious on keeping the climate, the global climate under control. And the agriculture as it goes today is going to the other direction, both because of pesticides and because of the carbon dioxide that the dairy farm and the meat farms are creating. And last and not least, we see a major global opportunity that alternative protein, artificial meat, is catching up and growing globally, and again, to feed the global population that we see going forward.
And time and again, we've been talking about investment in food and drink, and Israel has had an astonishing success in this area. What's the driver of that, and who has been investing?
The driver for that, I would say, is a traditional history in Israel of focusing on agriculture and food. But today, as a result of a very successful and extensive life science academic research that we have, basic research, especially in the university, Weizmann Institute, Technion, Bar Ilan, four or five multiple universities that have a very strong life science and academia, and the number of research and researchers and PhDs that coming out, that's on one hand. So for every innovation, you need the basic research, you need the applied research, and you need the power to translate it into product. Mm. And those are three elements. Translate innovation or translate applied research into product, you need to be very, very creative, and you need to think out of the box, and you need not to be afraid to fail. And on top of all of that, and those are kind of the ingredient, the Israeli culture is kind of apparently evolve, and we can talk more about it. But there is another element, which you need the capital, you need the fund. And today in Israel, there are more than 77 VCs, 77 that investing in the food tech in Israel. So if you put together technology or basic science, applied research, technology is transferred from academia to the industry, and you have a very initiative or very kind of creative scientists and engineers, and you have the capital, and you have the government support, primarily on the regulation side, and investing in area where there is market failure. Where, so if you have all of that together, you start to see a new ecosystem that being created. Mm-hmm. But the most important here is the VCs and the innovators who have the time to go through a very long process of development, of qualification, of regulation, and it's process that is minimum 4 and can go up to 10 years before you see the return. At the moment, we see companies with revenue, but none of them is already profitable.
So this brings us to the Innovation Authority. Now, you're chair of the Innovation Authority Board. Yes. Now, this is a fascinating idea for me, because at some level, the words innovation and authority might seem at odds with each other. They're a bit of a paradox, isn't it? Because when innovation tends to happen when people are unhindered by authority, but it's clearly working. So how does an innovation authority support innovations? What are your activities in the food tech sector?
So that's a very good question. And the authority is misleading a little bit. We believe, as the Israeli government, we believe on the free market. We believe on innovation. I will tell you more. We believe in Israel Innovation Authority, and I believe that our prime ministers, whoever he is at the given point, because Israel Innovation Authority was used to be called chief scientist prior to that, and that institution already exists 52 years. And throughout all those 52 years, you can argue, wow, then you belong to the museum. What are you still doing in the front line of the technology? All my predecessor, and I give them all the credit, and the all prime ministers in Israel throughout their generation have the notion that Israel need a strong and independent support to technology, and that government support to technology should come by government fund, but with not involvement, without interfering.
Which is a tricky balance, isn't it?
It's very tricky balance. If you remove your ego and you say, the entrepreneur are smarter than me as a government, and you absorb it, and you live through that, then you are at the point that the entrepreneur, and you will not believe how many entrepreneurs, small companies, large companies will come to you with a breakthrough idea that changing the world, like Aleph Farm, like Ami, that I will talk about them, and many, many others. Mm. And we as the government say, okay, you had a great idea. I will send you a reviewer, subject matter expert, to assess what you're proposing. Assessment is on technology, on a business opportunity globally. Always we look globally, not in Israel. With 9 million people, it's hard to generate $1 billion revenue and create unicorn. And how well you are funded, because we, as a government, willing to give you 50% of the total budget that you propose. You put the next 50, the other 50, a matching. So once you pass the evaluation, once you get the money, we give 50%, you give 50%, and now you're free to develop what you committed to develop. And now you come and we go with companies from the idea of one-man show all the way, and I can show you examples of a $1 billion company like Mobileye in Israel, that we chief scientist predecessor of mine 15 years ago funded, and many other initiatives. But the bottom line is, government come in where there is market failure, where the capitalism, I would say, the VC is have no value to add into that, or it's too risky for them to get in and to put their money. The risk reward too high to the risk. We at the government jump in, and we're willing to put the money, of course, not stupidly. We don't jump off the cliff, but after subject matter evaluation. And what we see, and that's an interesting number, that on every dollar that we provide to the startups, we get back at least 40 cents. Or if you like, 40%, which is outstanding number when you talk about innovation and startups, every VC would buy it, 40%. And that's as a return on the money. When we give money to startup, it's a conditional loan. You fail, the money is forgiven. Okay, it's okay to fail. If you succeed, you pay us a very slow pace, 3% of your revenue annually, 3% only. So for years, you pay only 3% to the limit of the loan we gave you and the LIBOR interest. So what I'm trying with this long answer is to say that we as a government, Israel Innovation Authority, is giving a support, financial support, to individual, to organization, even to a large company when they're coming with a breakthrough technology. And we take them to the point that the VC willing to put their money or other fund, being VC or private equity, or today in Israel, we have hundreds of VC and institution, global institutions that coming and investing because the high-tech industry is exploding.
Yeah. So basically, you're changing, it's a governmental tool to change the risk-to-reward ratio that will then attract VCs because you've shifted the balance there.
Exactly. Yeah. At a very early stage. Very early stage. And in some cases, even we're willing to share with the VC the risk and say, we give money, you give money, and you can buy us out. If the company really taking off, you can buy us out at the money, at the rate that we put, not at the real company value at the time, but as we just got into that, meaning at a very low valuation, you can buy us out and we'll go out. We as a government want to create technology, IP, and jobs in Israel. We are not looking on the fund return or on the capital return to the government through the company or through equity. We don't take equity. We would like to get the money back through tax and the income tax from employment and so on.
Okay, so we're going to come back to sort of strategic goals for behind all of this in a second, but I'd just like to sort of drift away and look at the sort of the foundations of, well, partly of this innovation culture, but also specifically the food innovation culture. Why is it so strong in Israel? Is it the result of geography, history, social factors? I mean, my trips to Israel have left me with the impression that in many areas, the landscape is pretty harsh. And it's a tough place to extract nutrition from, and it's a Mediterranean climate much at the tougher end of the scale. So is this a driver for innovation because you sort of have to?
Look, yes, because we have to, but not from the reason that you said. I would say it's more from economical reason. Economical, that we see it as a new growth engine. It's a new technology that really at the inception globally, and we believe that with the limited space, we cannot grow cattle here to the extent that we feed the world. We are not Argentina, but we can have enough reactors that we can grow meat to the rest of the world, if you like. And true, At the moment, it's not economically and it doesn't make money, but we already see the accelerator for the technology.
So we're talking about lab-grown meat here, sort of in vitro meat and the potential
exactly.
for that.
Yeah. Either alternative meat or artificial meat, both technology are growing and technology is moving very, very fast. So I would say with all the importance of food, the driver here, Israel can, at least for time being, is going out in exceptionally in investment because of the existence of technology, from the academia primarily, because of the entrepreneurship mindset, and because it's a new ecosystem that we already started and created here that can come into fruition relatively quickly, and the all conscientious of world climate. Because as you know, the dairy and the meat farm is one of the largest, I think 22% of the CO2 that being kind of generating and exporting in the world coming from the dairy and farm. So if you want to reduce the CO2, you have to go into alternative way to create food. So I think that from my perspective is primarily the business opportunity and to make the world a better place to live, because instead of all the pesticides, instead of all the pollution that conventional agriculture create, you can do it in a clean room environment without a CO2 exposure, then it's all win-win-win situation.
Mm. So you've mentioned climate change and other drivers, but there's also, if we put this into a broader context of political and strategic aims, which you also touched on a little bit earlier, that's a huge part of it, isn't it? That food security for Israel is an enormous topic. And I wonder if you can expand on that a little bit for me so we can understand it more. Why the government is therefore so keen to invest and to help companies?
Well, I have to correct you on something. All this investment is not from the government. That investment, primarily 90% of that coming from the private sector, from fund and the VCs, and we, the government, that we invest in very, very early stage. It's not because we decided top down. It came bottom up. It's not that I was so smart and one day as a government, I came and I say, by the way, I'm only 4 years in the government. I was in the private sector. And that started a little bit before me. But my predecessor, I don't want to take away from their wisdom, but I can tell you that it came bottom up. The startup, the innovator, the entrepreneurs came to us and say, we have that and that idea. And we say, even today, internally, in different initiatives that are reaching to us and applying to us, we're still arguing, but there is no economical clear future for that. Yet, we have a long debate, and despite the fact that the economical future today is not that clear, we're willing to continue to invest because we see the opportunity. There's beyond the horizon, and the horizon is a scientific knowledge at this point. And even the scientific knowledge at this point still does not make it profitable. But we strongly believe on the progress, on the trajectory that we see going. So unfortunately, I cannot say that it's because we are surrounded with, we are island and we don't have enough. That's not the reason. The reason here, specifically on the alternative food, I would say, is the scientific opportunity, the economical opportunity, the attraction, the capital flow to this, and the strong belief that we as a government have on our scientific community and our entrepreneur community, that they will take it eventually to success.
Hello there, only me, I just want to break into this conversation to say that if you're enjoying this episode, then once it's finished, you might want to check out the edition where we explore how the desert is being turned into fertile land with some extraordinary technology. Just go to foodmatterslive.com and search fertile land. And now, back to the chat. Now, in addition, there's a huge number of sort of smaller sized ag tech companies operating in Israel. And we see this in various countries around the world, that small companies do really well. Why in particular does it work so well in Israel? And how does that change the innovation dynamic?
Here I would go back to our culture. We are a society that know that we have to come with our own idea. The world not always will give us, I give you a broader answer, will not always provide us all our needs, primarily on the security side, and we need to be ahead. Let's create ahead technologically, ahead in the execution. I would say we live up, we grow up, and I grew up, I was born here in Israel, and the feeling is that you are with your back to the wall. Mm. You are on your own. If in a dire situation, in dangerous situation, the world will not come to rescue as a Holocaust survivors. We know, and if you look today, just a proof what happened in Ukraine, the world not necessarily will come to fight for you, not even always will provide you all the supply that you need. So when you grow up with your mindset, you know that you have to be the best in the world. And it sounds kind of a little bit egocentric, and no, we believe that wisdom was given evenly by God, I believe, to all human beings. All countries around the world, Africa, not all the wisdom is in Silicon Valley and not all the wisdom in London. It's evenly spread. And you can come up and try together with to be a better than the others if you can innovate. And here comes the clear and the key point. If you're willing to fail. Mm-hmm. If failure will not be a stigma, will not be something that no one will give you money anymore. But you know that if you fail and you understand the root cause of the failure, you come with corrective action, a financial institution, including Israel Innovation, will give you money second time. Mm. It's easy to say, but you know some cultures in the world, without mentioning name, that failure, it's out of questions. And in Israel, the fact that you can afford to fail and everyone will look at you as hero, not because you failed, but because you came out from the ashes and you try to fly again. It's critical because people are not afraid to take risk. Yeah. And now on top of it, if you have Israel Innovation Authority, that looking for those guys who taking the big risk, like alternative meat, like alternative protein, you are getting not only the mental support, but also the financial support, which is crucial. Mm. So that, and last and not least point, I would say that many of us as managers in Israel, We spend time primarily in the US, but also in Europe, and grew up as a global manager. Personally, I spent 16 years in the US, and I came back to Israel. And I worked in the semiconductor business, and I worked in selling equipment for Intel, for Samsung, for Toshiba, globally. So I understand the global market. I operated there. I grew up my career there. So we look globally and we have a very large management level with a global experience. Most of the Israeli high tech, and for me high tech is everything that have innovation in Israel, went through a period of global activity in the multinational companies, for example. We have in Israel more than 400 multinational companies that operating in Israel, primarily in research and development. And many of us as a manager went in their career through that. So that management level was one of the elements that we were missing like 10 years ago, but that gap was closed. So we have experience of business development, of global management. And if you put all of that together of the out-of-the-box thinking, of the not afraid to fail, taking risk, and if you cannot go through the door, come from the window. If you cannot go from the window, you jump from the roof. Don't give up. Mm-hmm. It's perseverance to the extreme. What everyone else saying on the Israeli chutzpah, if you know what it is, which is sometimes not to be polite and try to find a way to break through. And then sometimes people get upset with us in many times, especially if you stand in Israel in the line for the bus. You as a British probably will be the last one because everyone in Israel will jump ahead of you and will find good excuses. Don't get me wrong. But it's part of the culture with the pros and the cons. Not everything is pros. There are a lot of cons. As I said, sometimes you feel talking with Israeli, you feel humiliated, even that we are not intend to because we are very emotional, but very vocal. And I work for years with American, and they ask me, Ami, how can you talk with each other? You're yelling and shouting so much at each other. How come you friend at the end? And I said, no, we are just discussing. So different culture have different implications. If you know to take it, and I go back, with the support of government, knowing where to get in, and better know when to get out. That's crucial. And in Israel Innovation Authority, what you heard is the public sector gives money to the private sector. Usually government, public sector take money as a tax from the private sector. And here we're giving more than $500 million every year to the private sector for research and development, for a breakthrough technology. And here we go. Here you see the results.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's come back to, because you're getting excited now. So I want to find out what else excites you. And can you pick some of the innovative technologies and the ideas that are really exciting? I mean, you sound like you're particularly keen on the alternative protein market. Well, can you tell us, name some of the projects that you're really keen on?
Look, I think one of the, that the all the food industry today is not necessarily producing food to take care of your health, and the sugar level is outrageous, just that you continue to consume sweet. And there is a company called Amai Protein, who have Amai, it's a sweet in Japanese, who have alternative protein for sugar. It's a sugar substitute. So with a very, very small amount of protein, which the sweetness is order of magnitude higher than the protein of the sugar, you can sweeten your drink without actually your emotion, your feeling is the same, but your body don't have to absorb, doesn't get all this. So that's one area that really, really exciting me because you take care of the default of our food habits and the way that the beverage industry kind of pushing to you older beverage. And another one that on the same area, it's a better juice. Also removing sugar from freshly squeezed orange. So again, you put it in the industry and you have less. And why it's exciting me so much, because it doesn't change your habit on one end, but keep you healthier on the other end. And if you think how it also will impact on all the health industry, that you have less obesity, less people depending on getting another way to reduce weight. That's one area that's look well, but it's a major. Think about it that Coca-Cola and Pepsi and all will change the way that they are. So that's one. Another one is the artificial meat, because again the dairy farm and we have a real milk, which is I would say it's not really artificial, but it's a alternative milk that you don't have to milk the cow. You can grow it's in a tank in a biological way, actually inside the capsule. So it's a substitute for milk, but at the same time for the meat. We have a company like Aleph Farm that can produce both the protein, the steak, the fat, even there is way to generate the alternative blood. So you can, with a 3D printer, which is amazing, you actually print a steak with all three elements in it. And it's look and it tastes like a real steak. So think about it, it's all done in the lab. You don't have to feed the cattle. Think how much of the farming land today is actually generating the food for the cows, and how inefficient, and the water contamination, how inefficient in terms of the global environment the meat industry today. And at the same time, we're growing alternative meats for fish. And so what you do, what is so exciting, it's because you keep the standard of living, maybe even elevate the standard of living and the habit that we have, without actually contaminating the world, without changing the climate of the world. So it's like a win-win, and it's a new business industry. So economically, it will make sense. At the moment, it doesn't come to economic. But when it's so good, I have all the confidence on the scientists, on engineer, on the entrepreneur, on the management that they will take it into be a very, very profitable business and save our globe that we all taking care of and want it to be saved. But not all of us willing to compromise our standard of living for that. And here we offer alternative. Don't change your standard of living, actually elevate it, yet keep the world clean and better. Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about things that seem very futuristic, but they've been around for a little while, really. It's almost we're waiting for, as you say, we're waiting for them to start making products at scale and then entering the world of finance where they ought to start making a profit. But that's now been around for a little while, the idea of that. What about trends that are coming up? Are there some new emerging technologies that you're really excited about for the future that are right at the very early stage?
Yes, I'm also very excited about what I will call the conventional agriculture.
Crazy idea.
Right, because today you can irrigate and provide the right amount of fertilizer tree by tree. And if you want to know which tree is in more need for water or for fertilizer, you take up a drone, or you can look even from space, or you can look up from unmanned vehicle, and they fly over the field. And they give you direct indication up to the tree, the right tree, and then it's communicate with the irrigation system that can open the dripper at the right tree, and all the farmer, which not all the farmers usually globally go to school or to become expert and scientist in agriculture, they can operate it out of their iPhone and see the map. And they get in the cloud and in the big data and the back office of expert who guided and provide you. All you need is to buy the service.
And then it's precision agriculture, basically.
It's a precision agriculture that combine on many different levels, from the level of seeds and the incubation of the fresh seed that just kind of starting to grow, all the way to harvesting, all the way actually to predicting the maturity level, when to do the harvesting, how to look in the supply chain. And oh, by the way, you can grow it in a greenhouse in many cases today, adjacent to the population, where the population that needed it, and you don't, and you cut the transportation line and the shelf times. So agriculture, the conventional agriculture, going through a major revolution that will, in my mind, is already increasing 15, 20, 30% of the productivity, reducing by 20, 30% the investment.
And the use of fertilizers and insecticides and pesticides, where in the past you would lay your pesticide across the entire field. Now it's very specific where it's needed and where it's most useful.
And let me tell you what excites me the most. Excites me the most is the automation level and robotics. I tell you, robotics, you can actually operate the whole farm today. The vegetable, and primarily the vegetable, let's talk about it, carrots and potato, without human touch. You can send autonomous tractor. It's easy to operate autonomous. It doesn't have to run through people, you know, all the complications. It exists today. And you can get all the information. Why it's so exciting me? Because 50 years ago, 53 years ago, I will not tell you what was my age, but 53 years ago, I was sitting on a machine on the kibbutz where I grew up that picked up carrots from the ground on a combine that picked up the carrots, cut the leaf, dumped it on the truck. 53 years ago, no human touch from the ground to the bag that went to the market. No human touch, 53 years ago. Today, I argue, it's all can be done and already in process to be done by robots automatically. So when you ask about Israel, think about that 50 years ago, we were at the level of mechanized equipment. And why? Because we have a shortage of labor. We did not have enough people to work in the field. So we use the automation, the mechanized combine that pick up the carrots. So today when I go to the farm and I see that robots can start moving and doing all this work, again, you ask then what the people will do. Trust me, there are plenty of jobs. You don't have to wake up at 4 a.m. and you don't have, you know, milk the cow. You don't have to wake up at 4 a.m. You can do it actually instead of taking the cow, and I'm changing subject, instead of taking the cow to the center where you milk them, the robot come to them and milk the cows. So for me, I have to say I'm very, very excited because it's closer to me.
Absolutely.
Personally, I'm very excited to see how the farm and the farmer actually, but again, unfortunately, the progress is not as fast as I would like to see. But I argue that it, like in many, many other cases, you always, it's a slow start and then it's pick up. And I believe that will be the case also with all the alternative meat and all the alternative protein. It takes some time for incubation, but once it's take up and you start to make money, you start to see the revenue growth and the risk goes down, then more capital being invested into that, and then it's taking off. Like the semiconductor, like the chips, and I'm in the semiconductor business for 40 years, and I cannot compare what was the investment and how it looked 40 years ago and what it is today. And I believe that all the food tech is just 30 years behind the semiconductor. It will be very similar and be huge, huge market.
Okay, so my last question really is, what can the rest of the world learn from the Israeli food tech sector, from the sort of dynamism within which it all works? Is it government support? Is it the notion of smaller businesses? What do you think is the main driver that the other countries could use?
If there is one word that I, or two words that I want the audience to take from this discussion, Stefan, is ecosystem. You need the country to create ecosystem. And ecosystem is composition of many, many elements, which always start with the basic research, and I will go even to education. Unless there will be a good education system. You cannot expect to have top scientists if you don't have a good elementary system. If you don't have a good high school, middle class, high school. So education, it's a prerequisite that no government should compromise on. Very high level of research. Sometimes government feel that we dump a lot of money in research, but nothing come out of it. It's actually true in most of the countries. You don't see, so the transition of research, of basic research, of the research product into applied and into the industry. The next step, and the government should get involved, is to stimulate the academia to take the knowledge and distribute it to the industry to make impact on the economy. The next step that you need, every country with its own culture, as we said, is those entrepreneurs. And if you are afraid to fail, then you as a government should find a way how you can supplement it. How? Because I don't believe you can change culture, but I believe you can provide rewards that will not scare the hell out of those who fail. The next element is the capital. You need the capital, and you need to find and to convince those huge trillions of dollars that are available today that will come to be in your country. And then, and that's something new that I started to use now, you need to make impact on the well-being of your society and on the globe. I have to give credit here to Sir Ronald Cohen, that I just talked with him, and I'm in the process of reading his book. Ronald, here is a free kind of advertising to your book, because the impact that you have to consider on society, on the globe, on the climate is critical. I don't think we can afford anymore the system that damage the globes that you all living on. And I would say the last point that is unique to Israel, I don't recommend it to anyone, is the transformation that our teenagers go through their military service. And you don't need the military service, but I think social service could be something similar, but that you grow up and you know that there is a point that you're going to serve your country, and you're going to give the absolutely maximum that you can to your country. In Israel, it's in terms of military service, which is very, very demanding, and it's create transformation in people's mind, because you're being stressed to your edge, absolutely edge. And I tell you personally, when you are in it, you hate every minute of it, and you cry and you curse, and but when you go out and you look backward, you said, that's point of giving to the country and country that demand you to go to your extreme, actually change me, change my mind, make me more mature. I would argue that Israeli kids who are finishing their military service, and in Israel there is also civil service, not necessarily military, they are more mature, like 10 years more mature than others who did not go through this.
So, Dr. Armi Applebaum, thank you so much for joining me. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. For example, if you go to the site and search Career Conversations, you'll find our series looking at the many varied roles that are available in the food sector. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And thank you so much for listening.